And there's a whole host of other evidence from around the world that actually suggests that physical activity during cancer, and now even before cancer, can be really beneficial. Breath is Best is really outdated now. There's so much evidence. We've got about 20 years worth of evidence to say that physical activity is really important. And if that's the one thing you can take away from this, is that if you know somebody who is undergoing treatment, or you yourself may be undergoing treatment, just try and move a little bit more, because it really will make a big impact to the way you manage that treatment and then your lives and your years afterwards as well.
Hello and welcome to the Experts in Health podcast, brought to you by Loughborough University. This podcast aims to highlight the latest research and trends in health as we welcome a variety of guests from a host of different disciplines. I'm Dr. Chris McLeod, an academic in the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences with an expertise in behavioural nutrition and public health. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Kajal Gokul, who is a Senior Research Associate in Behavioural Medicine at Loughborough University. Kaj, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Welcome to Experts in Health.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just to start us off then, can you tell our listeners and viewers just a little bit about yourself, what you do, anything else you want to tell us about you?
Yeah, so I'm as you said, a senior researcher in behavioural medicine. I'm a psychologist by background, and my research really focuses on providing people with the tools and the information to live a healthier lifestyle. My expertise and real passion is around the prevention and management of cancer through physical activity. I've been involved in projects where we provide, for example, young mothers with the resources to be physically active, and whether that is access to a gym that has childcare beside it and access to food banks. So this project's actually based in New York City, where there's quite a health disparity. So we're providing those young mothers with the tools and the, you know, the opportunities to be able to be active and hopefully model that for their children from a prevention point of view, so increasing their activity, living a healthier lifestyle, access to healthy foods. And then I guess my real passion and interest is around providing patients who have been diagnosed with cancer with the ability to be physically active, and to ensure that that message previously was that rest is best for patients actually maybe isn't potentially true anymore. And we've got a lot of evidence to say that physical activity is actually crucial and should be a crucial cog in that patient's journey and treatment pathway.
That's really, really interesting. We're going to get into that, because I can imagine how many people this will affect. You know, how many people we can actually tell about that the old message might not be actually the best message anymore. But how did you get into, why do you have this passion in this area? Is it something that just your career you found yourself going into?
Yeah.
Is it anything more personal?
A little bit. So if I'm totally honest, when I was an undergraduate, I spent a year in Australia and I spent time working with a clinical psychologist on a large research program. And I always thought I'd come back from Australia, finish my undergraduate, and I'd go into clinical psychology. I then very naturally and very in hindsight was probably the best move I did was started working for an undergraduate supervisor whose wife was actually based at Loughborough and was advertising for a PhD and encouraged me to apply. And that's where I am now. And then I guess the topic was cancer and how we can manage people's cognition, actually. Mm-hmm. So when people are going through treatment, breast cancer patients going through treatment, there is often this term called chemo brain, which is a bit like fogginess. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to look at how best we can try and manage that. And physical activity, to me at the time, seemed like the best option. Mm-hmm. And so back then I started to explore that. And then, as you say, the route kind of just went from there. And I love what I do now.
I love hearing also how people have the squiggly career to get to the place that they're at. Or, you know, what are the different junctures that came? And it's led you to this area where you're doing really impactful, really important work. At the end of this, you know, our recording today, might there be things that people who are listening or watching this could actually take into their own, or the people that they're supporting into their actual lives? Or is this something that, you know, you're just going to be talking at the research level?
No. So I think one of the key messages that I'm really, really trying to get out there and tell as many people as I possibly can is that for everybody, you know, it's really important that we're moving more And when I say moving more, I don't mean running a marathon or, you know, starting a triathlon training or anything like that. Just simple movements. It's really important from a prevention point of view to live a healthy, longer life. But also for patients that are undergoing treatment for cancer, it's so important that they try and be a little bit active or try and at least keep up with their daily activities best they can. And that perception, as I mentioned, that, you know, rest is best is really outdated now. There's so much evidence. We've got about 20 years worth of evidence to say that physical activity is really important. And if that's the one thing you can take away from this, is that if you know somebody who is undergoing treatment or you yourself may be undergoing treatment, just try and move a little bit more, because it really will make a big impact to the way you manage that treatment and then your lives and your years afterwards as well.
Yeah, okay, well, that's a big message. I like that. Take us through a little bit about the evidence then, because to many people, I think they might still think, you know, no, I couldn't possibly do physical activity during, you know, cancer treatment or after cancer treatment. So what is the evidence? You talk about prevention and then the management of cancer. Yeah, what can you tell us?
So I guess from a prevention point of view, living a healthier lifestyle. And when I say living a healthier lifestyle, I mean, you know, so 40% of cancers, which is a pretty big number, can be prevented through living a healthier lifestyle. And a lot of that is tobacco use. So lung cancer is one of the biggest cancers out there. And so tobacco use, when I say use, I mean chewing tobacco as well as smoking it, trying to stop smoking. Physical activity, which is what most of my research focuses on, between 10 and 24% of cancers, the risk can be reduced by, you know, taking part in moderate to vigorous levels of physical activity, eating healthier, so, you know, avoiding your processed foods, eating your fruit and veg. All of those things together can reduce, you know, prevent your chances of getting cancer. Doesn't mean, you know, I'm not at all saying that it's a guarantee, but it can really help to reduce that. And that evidence, I guess, has been strong and people are aware of that, and that goes for a lot of the chronic diseases. I guess from the management of cancer and controlling cancer point of view, that kind of came in around, I'd say, over 20 years ago, if physical activity is of benefit to patients. And I guess it started with patients after they'd finished treatment, because asking patients to do anything during treatment was pretty challenging. But my PhD looked at the benefits of physical activity for ladies going through breast cancer. So I did a randomized controlled trial, which is asking, I had 50 ladies who had just been told that they were going to have chemotherapy for breast cancer. So half of them, I just asked them to do moderate levels of walking and try and hit 10,000 steps a day. And the other half continued as normal. And I wanted to see whether or not that exercise or that physical activity would have an impact on their psychosocial well-being, so their fatigue, their anxiety, depression, self-esteem. But as I briefly touched on, I was also really interested in looking at how it would impact their cognition, so their memory and their chemo brain, the chemo fog. But first of all, everybody was delighted. Everyone was so interested and, you know, they felt like they had control over their treatment. So the ladies who I asked to do moderate levels of walking, overall, that we found that they had better levels of fatigue in comparison to those who weren't doing physical activity. And fatigue is one of the biggest kind of side effects of treatment during chemotherapy. We also found that they had better levels of mood, self-esteem was better. But really interesting, from the cognition point of view, we looked at whether or not, so we did loads of memory tests, if you like, so device measured, objective measures, and we also collected cognition subjectively. And subjectively, people who were physically active had stable levels. So they didn't report that it was getting worse, but actually those who weren't as physically active, it was declining. So that's one study that I did. And there's a whole host of other evidence from around the world that actually suggests that physical activity during cancer, and now even before cancer, can be really beneficial. As I said, it can help with your psychosocial well-being. There's evidence to say that it can improve your tolerance to chemotherapy. There's evidence now that it can potentially reduce the length of hospitalisation, the length of time you spend in hospital, which obviously naturally then has an impact on the NHS as well and the cost of these treatments, because, you know, treatment for cancer is not cheap. Mm. It can ultimately, though, reduce your risk of your cancer coming back, of recurrence, by up to 40%, depending on what cancer it is. So for breast cancer patients, it can actually reduce your risk of can, not a guarantee, reduce that risk and ultimately prevent other comorbidities and other diseases and can increase your survival.
Wow, it's a good sales pitch. I'm sold. But yeah, that's the reason why we have, you know, people on these podcasts who are passionate and know their stuff. You know, there's research and data behind this. How did that change though? How you know, it used to be rest is best. Why was that the advice at the time? And then, how, yeah, you say it's been about 20 years in the making since that transition. Have we made a full transition now, or, you know, is there still a little bit of rest is best out there that people, you know, people think that's the best way still?
So I guess to answer your first question, I think it's changed because previously a lot of the research was focused around how we can help, you know, save these people's lives. But actually, people are surviving much longer now. People are being diagnosed earlier. We've got better screening. We've got better treatments. People are surviving. So there was a real shift in the research to focus on these people are surviving. How are we going to support them to live longer, healthier, happy lives? Way before my time, people started looking at what can we do? And as I said, there was a lot of emphasis on the survivorship or post-treatment. Don't really like that term, but post-treatment. And then there was a shift towards what can we do during treatment and have and I guess that's where it really bloomed and there was so much evidence. And, you know, I guess for other chronic diseases, the evidence is there and we're a lot further on in it. So if somebody was to be diagnosed or somebody was to have a heart attack, they would be referred on to speak, to look at their exercise. They would, you know, be told to live a healthier lifestyle. Whereas we're not quite there yet with cancer and that evidence isn't quite in the NHS yet. The message hasn't quite got out there. But the World Health Organization in 2020 did have new physical activity guidelines and they have, the evidence is strong enough now, I guess. We've got enough of that robust evidence to suggest that physical activity is crucial. And now we do have guidelines and actually people with cancer, living with and after cancer, are encouraged to do at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity a week, which is exactly the same as it is for the general population, but people aren't aware of that because the message hasn't quite got there yet.
So before I get on to why the message hasn't got there and how you might actually end up doing that, can I just pick you up on when you said you're not quite a fan of post-treatment term? Can you educate me as to why?
Sorry, it wasn't the post-treatment, it was more the survivor term that I don't like.
Yeah, okay.
That term of survivor, so I try and, I think it's in there in the literature a lot, but I always try and avoid using that term because post-treatment for me sounds...
Yeah. No, that makes sense. No, that's very helpful. Okay, barriers to actually implementing this. When you're doing a randomized control trial like you did during your PhD, you've got this very, you know, limited period of time and potentially limited pool samples or clusters, we might want to call it, if you're looking at hospitals that you might target. But that's very different to getting a pervasive message across the whole of the NHS, across everyone who has cancer treatment. So can you just talk a little bit about those barriers?
So I think the number one barrier that I've come across in my research is changing that perception.
From the medical practitioner or for the people?
From both. Okay. Medical practitioners, patients, family members, you know, your loved ones, that rest is best. Because previously, that is what people were told. You know, they were told you're going to have treatment, you need to conserve your energy, you need to rest. And naturally, when somebody's going through such a grueling treatment, you know, it takes it out of you. It's really exhausting, physically and mentally. People, your loved ones do want to wrap you up. They do want to say, no, you sit down and, you know, I'll make you a cup of tea. But actually, those small things that you think are being really helpful, and they probably are in some situations, are actually preventing that person from living that taken away from their day-to-day activities and their ability to get up and, you know, make their own bed, make their cup of tea. So it's changing that perception. But actually, I've just done some interviews recently with healthcare professionals. So I've been speaking to oncologists, cancer nurses, chemotherapy nurses, and people who are on the ground delivering this amazing treatment. And sometimes they're not aware of the evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, I spoke to one person in particular who said, you know, if there were some really robust randomized controlled trials that that told me that physical activity is important. And I was like,
there are loads.
But I guess it's not their focus, and rightly so. They are there. They are so busy. And, you know, I've been in clinics where oncologists are having a bite of a sandwich in between meetings. It is exhausting. They are very overworked, and it's not their focus. Mm. So I guess my work is really focused on around how we can change that. And then from a patient's perspective, they want, so the oncologist saying that they don't have necessarily the information, the knowledge, or even the resources to be able to provide guidance on how patients can be physically active. And I think one of the oncologists actually said, you know, I'm fearful of raising the topic without having that solution. Whereas patients on the flip side want that information, are happy to receive that information, but also need real tangible resources to be able to go away and think about what they can do and how they can do it. Yeah. So that's some of the barriers. And then another barrier, I guess, for patients, particularly during treatment, are the body changes, body image, and, you know, they don't really want to be going into a gym, or they don't know what they can, where to go into a gym, and can they go swimming, or, you know, they've lost their hair, do they want people to see that? So there's those barriers, and then the logistical barriers of going in and out of hospital for treatment. You know, they're feeling like they're reliant on other people to take them places. How can they be active when they're already such a, you know, their family are already really helping them?
There's a lot of challenges, that's all I can say. There's a lot of barriers there. Can you just help us with what sort of physical activity people should be doing? You said it's not running a marathon,
no,
but there's also just you're doing your daily stuff, making your bed, etc. What in between those is also good for people?
So walking is a key one, I guess, for patients, depending on what sort of treatment they've had, depending on what cancer they've had. So walking is one that is probably one that doesn't require a lot of additional equipment. As I said earlier, you're encouraged to do 150 minutes throughout the week, and that doesn't necessarily mean large chunks. So it could be starting really small, making a cup of tea, or, you know, I suggested to a patient, write a letter to a friend or a grandchild and post. Everybody loves receiving post, but then you're walking to the postbox to actually deliver that letter. Yeah. And then small things in your daily routine that are manageable for you, and even just getting outside and getting some fresh air can sometimes be really helpful. But I should also say that whilst you're doing the aerobic activity, such as walking, it's also really important for bone health and muscle strength to be doing more resistance-based training as well. And like I say, it doesn't have to be anything really taxing. It could be something at home where you feel comfortable. So a lot of the patients I spoke to prefer to do things in their home, and whether that is put something on YouTube and follow it, do a bit of yoga, watching something, or whether that is trying to go for a walk with somebody, with a loved one, and arranging things that fit your schedule around your treatment. Because the other thing to bear in mind is that when patients are going in for treatment, they have this schedule where they're kind of like really good days and really bad days. So is it that when you know you're going to have a bad day, you kind of think, actually, no, I am going to just sit on the sofa that's absolutely fine. You are going to have those bad days where you think, no, I just had treatment, I need to sit at home, and that's fine. But then maybe set a goal for those other days when you are feeling better, and think, actually, no, I know in week three I'm going to be feeling much more myself, so I am going to go out, I'm going to arrange. And sometimes making those plans makes you a little bit more accountable as well.
Yeah, I can see that. It's kind of the same shape as, I mean, I know that I have that as well. If I've got a really busy time or I'm ill, I'm not feeling too well, then I might not do something on that day, but actually then I might think about, okay, what in the next few days might I do? And what do I feel like I can do that's sort of feasible for me? So it's kind of a similar sort of shape. You just got to work with maybe a different pattern, maybe a different feelings that you've got, but you can do too much. Is that fair?
Yes, yeah. You can do too much. And I guess the really important thing to remember, which is a very good point, Chris, is that you should really listen to your body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you are going to be going through changes. There are going to be times where you're not going to be, potentially, if you were active before, as strong as you were. So maybe don't put as much pressure on yourself. The other thing, I know I've said that there's this 150 minutes, but I'm all for not telling the patient that they should have a specific dose, or you should you should hit this, or you should hit that. Just aim towards it. You know, I always suggest that they try and do something, even if it's small, and then build themselves up. So there isn't that pressure of then feeling like, oh, I didn't hit that goal. You know, I didn't hit my 10,000 steps. It's okay. It's fine. You know, there might be a day when you do 11. There may be a day when you do 2. Like, it's absolutely fine. And like you said, it's the same for everybody. It's no different.
So where can people currently get information about, not the research, practically, where can they actually go to find out about this? You know, that tangible resource that they might go into their hands, that can stick it on a fridge or whatever. Like, where does that come from?
So this is where we're struggling a little bit, which is where my research comes in. There are brilliant books out there. There's a book called Moving Through Cancer, and there's some brilliant podcasts out there as well from people who have discussed this. But actually, for having a resource that, you know, like you say, you can stick on a fridge, it's lacking. And I think patients want that information to come from what I've understood and from the people I've spoken to. They want it to come from a healthcare professional, as opposed to something on Google, because they are still, and rightly so, still a little bit skeptical about what they can do. But I think the really important thing to remember is anything and everything is really important, and do something that feels right for you and for your body, and whether that is walking or yoga or a bit of a stretch.
Even if they've got no energy, and, you know, because it does take it out of you, you know, cancer treatment. And then also there's the psychological impact and the sort of like the amount of emotional resilience you might have at that particular point. So it might still be, as you're sort of saying, you know, you're going to have those times where you don't feel like doing it, but, you know, how do you help someone in that stage? What would you say to them if they were in that position?
So I guess one of the things that I found really interesting and really fascinating is when I've spoken to patients that have kind of come across that hurdle and taken those first steps, is that they felt they finally had control. So a lot of the time when they're going through treatment, they're being told, right, you've got to be in this place for this treatment, that place for that. And it's very scheduled. And they felt they didn't have any kind of control or voice over what was going on. They were told what treatment they were going to have and they did it. But actually, once they were active, that was something that they could own, they had ownership over, and they felt more in control of that, their treatment and their, you know, their route and their pathway. Coming from somebody who is quite active, it is difficult to try and get that message across. And I think, again, it really is start small, set yourself some goals maybe of what you would like to achieve, get people involved, speak to your loved ones, speak to your friends. Is there any way that maybe they can support you and they can give you that little push? And like I said, try and get a little bit creative. It doesn't, like I said, put at the post box, you know, it doesn't have to be a big chunk. It could even just be a 10-minute walk, you know, go to the park with the grandchildren or the children. And
sounds good. There's been some really helpful practical tips in this, but you know, you're doing still more work in this area, loads of things that you're doing research in. So what can you lay them out right now? What are you currently doing to push the field on even more?
Yeah, so I think my big thing right now is, how can we get that message embedded in the NHS? How can we ensure that every single patient that is going through treatment is told, even if it's a very quick 10 seconds, you know, I really think it's important for you to be active, and that given that go ahead, you know, given the thumbs up that, you know, you should be active, it is okay. And I think that speaking with oncologists, speaking with healthcare professionals, there's a lot of work to be done there around providing healthcare professionals with the tools and the knowledge and the training to even be confident enough to deliver that message, because they want to know what is going on. So that, I think, is the first step. So I am working with a great group of healthcare professionals, and we're trying to deliver and create that training and working with them, but also working with a group of patients at various stages of their treatment, those who've completed treatment, to ask what is that resource? That resource that you mentioned earlier, is it something you want on a fridge? Is it something remote? So a lot of the patients have mentioned that they want something remote, something that they can then, once they finish that consultation, they can go home and sit down and really process that. Because remember, they're being taught a lot of information. They've got whole handful of leaflets. So what is it that we can give to you that you can then take home and process yourself and also process with the people that are around you that are supporting you, so together you're aware of the benefits? And then how are we going to implement that within the NHS? Yeah. How are we going to get that in there so that every patient is told, or every patient is given the tools to be able to be active? And it is possible. So I've been to some brilliant privately run places where you go in and you're having a chemotherapy on the right and you've got a gym on the left. So you go in and you do a personal trainer led workout, and then you go in to have your chemotherapy. And actually the benefits are really, really strong, and the people that I've spoken to. So I'm not saying, you know, the NHS is going to be able to afford to do that. I appreciate that's not the case. But the evidence is getting stronger, and we know it's there, and the guidelines are there. So we just need to get that and provide our patients and our healthcare professionals with the tools to be able to deliver on that and to feel confident enough to deliver on that message. So that's, I guess, what I'm trying to really do.
Amazing direction. I would love it that we did think about, you know, that shape that's in a private sector that you saw, that's maybe, you know, really good practice. You know, why can't we have that in the NHS as well? I'd love people who are at the center of you know, the director positions within the NHS can have such a vision. Maybe if there's like change in perspective, whether, you know, whatever level that comes, because so many things are benefited by physical activity. It's not just cancer treatment, you know, it's just so many things. So.
And like I said, it is there for some, you know, it's just not routine. It's that some people do have these brilliant access to these brilliant places, and, you know, there might be a local group close by. It's just not routine within all NHS cancer treatment centres.
And from what I know from your work as well, you've got quite a focus on looking at who also, in terms of this lack of parity, who currently gets this information, or if there's a particular demographic across the UK that doesn't, is less likely to take it up, whether that's because it's private, or are there any other demographics?
So that's really interesting, actually. So a lot of this evidence that I've spoken about and a lot of the work that is out there and that's brilliant research is really focused on white patients. And a lot of the time, unfortunately, those from ethnic minorities, from black backgrounds or Asian backgrounds, are kind of excluded from that research for a whole host of reasons. Language barriers, a lack of trust. So a lot of that research actually focuses on the white population. However, something that I'm really interested in and really want to push forward, I guess, is trying to reduce that health inequality, because if you're from an ethnic background, you are much less likely to be diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. However, you also have a lower survival rate. You are prone to have more comorbidities. We also know that the evidence for that, the physical activity, for example, in that population is much lower. And I really want to unpick that. I want to try and understand why that is and how we can change that and how we can really engage with people from those backgrounds to you know, trust the system and to you know, seek that additional information. So I know I spoke a little bit about control earlier. I've spoken to people that will just take what a doctor says as gospel because that's what they've been told. They don't understand that actually, no, you can ask for more information. You could potentially do a different treatment path, or even not really understanding what they've been told because their loved ones told them that they need to do something or not. And there's still a real taboo, unfortunately, around having a diagnosis of cancer and not feeling that they can share that with other people. So yeah, I guess it's trying to understand that process of why people feel that they can't come forward, and then how we can help them, how we can encourage that activity. And, you know, there's a lot of cultural barriers associated with physical activity, and like I said, those from ethnic backgrounds do have the lowest levels of physical activity, unfortunately, which doesn't help, but higher chances of other complications as well.
And a lot of that, from what you've said, is preventable. It's maybe socially determined rather than it is genetics, for example. And so if we can work out how the system can be changed, then those people might not even have to make decisions to go towards something more. It might just be embedded in the way things are for them. That's really interesting. Where can people go to find out more about you, about your research, about this area? You know, where can you signpost them to?
So I'm on social media. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. But I guess there's a really nice video that I did with Professor Amanda Daly and Yorkshire Cancer Research, which is hosted on our CLIMB website, which has got a video all about the benefits of physical activity for patients during cancer. And it's actually got some really great snippets from some of the patients, and so it really shares that patient perspective. And so I would say for anybody that's kind of on the border and maybe doesn't want to go ahead and be active and thinks it's probably not for them, just go and have a listen to that video, because actually you can really see how, from a patient's perspective, not just me as a researcher who, you know, hasn't got any personal experience, and it may just give you that, you know, that bit of direction and that little bit of encouragement from somebody who's experienced it.
Yeah, that sounds great. And, you know, just to encourage people, I guess, from what I've learned here today, if you've heard this and you're not currently doing any physical activity during your treatment, or, you know, the people that you care about, go and ask your, you know, the person who's your trusted medical practitioner, who's, you know, your main contact, ask them about it. Because if you might still be a little bit unsure about what to do when, at least having that conversation starts it off.
Exactly. And actually, that's a really good point, because a lot of the people I've speak to, oncologists and healthcare professionals, say that they are reactive conversations. So they tend to bring it up or discuss it when a patient is initially the first person to bridge that conversation. So don't be afraid and go and ask those questions and seek that additional information.
And hopefully at some point in the future, the person won't have to seek it.
It'll already be there. It'll be in the system. This is the chemotherapy you're having, this is the radiotherapy you're having, and this is the exercise that we want you to take part in, hopefully.
Well, we'll watch this space for your work.
We will get there. You know, it was the same for cardiovascular disease some years ago, and they've made it through now, and people are referred on to gyms. So it will happen. It's just going to be a bit of a process.
I mean, all of this is amazing, incredibly beneficial work. We know how many people are affected by cancer across the world. So it's almost like you don't have to sell this too much as to why it's important or why people should do it. But from what, you know, from your perspective, what would you say to the next generation, you know, younger people today, why should they get into the area that you're doing, what you're doing at the moment? Why is it important?
Really good question. For me, I think I know from speaking to patients and seeing the benefits, it can really make a difference. You know, I had patients come in to me and said, you know, I've done my 10,000 steps and I feel fantastic, and it's really helped. And just providing people with that control and that sense of control to really make a difference to somebody. And there's evidence to say that, I should have said earlier, that those benefits are, you know, people were followed up and 5 years later they were still feeling the benefits. So I think if I can even help one person, if you can help one person to feel better, to feel like they can face their treatment and they can manage it better, I think I've done a good job.
And today's podcast will have definitely done that to one person. So, Kaj, thank you so much for coming on today's podcast. And thank you very much for listening and tuning in today to today's episode. If you've liked what you've heard today, then feel free to like or subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. And you can also check out our other podcast, Experts in Sport, and you can find a link to that in the show notes. So that just leaves me to say once again, thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to welcoming you back to another health-related discussion in a future episode. Bye-bye for now.